You don't need to go and hide behind the sofa to listen to this one. We're not going to talk about the current season. This podcast is a tribute to Dr. Joe and Big Shuggy. Little bit Big Shuggy, mainly Dr. Joe. This week we had the sad passing of two Celtic people that made an impact on our club. Big Johan Edvoldsen, who for those of us growing up in the 70s was one of the first continental foreign signings that we had at Celtic. So very exciting. So we get St Anthony on, 5 minutes or so talking about Big Shuggy. And then there's myself, St Anthony and Anthony Murray. And we talk about the season of Dr. Joe, the season that followed Wim Jansen. So enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, with him, St Anthony, and him, Anthony Murray.
Please tell us why you had to hide away for so long. Why did we come along?
We know what it's like on the pitch just now, so we're not going to talk about that. We are going to talk about, we had two Celtic people passed away this week, within 24 hours or 48 hours of each other, more or less. Big Johan Edvoldsen and Dr. Joseph Venglos. We can touch on Big Shuggy because one of the guests is St Anthony, but we're going to mainly focus on the life and times at Celtic Football Club of Dr. Joseph Venglos, since it was quite an eventful time. So I've got Anthony Murray and Saint to talk about that. So how you doing, guys?
Very well, thanks.
Dobre.
Usual question, what's the weather like in Central Europe?
A little bit colder, a little bit of snow falling down. There was a thaw, and then it's coming back cold. So it's like being in a Ridley Scott movie, you know, that kind of sideways snow that whisks left and right. So it's all quite exciting.
Renfrew, how's it in Renfrew, Saint?
Dark, very dark.
Yes. So very briefly, we'll just touch on Big Shuggy, Saint. So he, at a time, hard to imagine now, you didn't sign foreign players. You signed Scottish players. You had a very occasional other player. And we had Big Shuggy Edvoldsen. So briefly, tell us your memories of Big Shuggy, Saint.
Probably the first memory I've got is the day that he signed, because as you said there, Celtic, every Scots team in those days were full of Scottish players. It was very unusual to get somebody from a different nationality, even English or Irish. So this guy coming from Iceland, Iceland captain he was at the time, and everybody I just remember was excited to watch him play. There was great anticipation and his signing. And it was a difficult period because Jock Steen had the car crash and missed the season, and Sean Fallon took over as interim manager for a period. Billy McNeil had retired, Jinky had moved on, Jim Brogan had moved on. It was a real period of change at Celtic, and Shuggy represented the new Celtic, if you like, as a new face. And I think that the most endearing thing about Big Shuggy was twofold. Number one, he was a very versatile player. I mean, he could play him at centre half, he could play him in midfield, you could play him up front, and he was always, always very effective. For a big man, he had great strength, but he'd a very delicate touch. He was a very skillful player as well. And then the other thing was, and anybody who saw him will witness to this, he was brilliant in games against Rangers. He was absolutely in his element. I mean, the likes of Big Forsyth and Wee McDonald were terrified of the big man, because he had a physical presence, but he was also, as I said, he was very effective. He scored a lot of goals against Rangers. He seemed to relish games against Rangers in particular because of that style that Rangers had at the time. It was very rumbustious and very direct. Well, that suited Shuggy a lot better than playing against the likes of Paul Sturrock or Joe Harper. So it did. He was in his element when it came to that. So really sad to hear that he passed away, because he was one of the legends of the 10 men who won the league in 1979. He had a fantastic game that night, and he was a very popular character with the supporters. The supporters took to him immediately. He had a great rapport with the fans. And I think anybody who saw him will genuinely feel, you know, very, very sad at this time that he passed on at a fairly young age. You know, I think he was 71. So in you know, this day and age, that's quite young. And sadly, they say it was COVID-related, which is a curse of this infection that is on the rounds at the moment. So farewell, Big Shuggy. He'll always be fondly remembered in the hearts of those who saw him play.
So after the passing of Big Shuggy on Sunday, a couple of days later, we got the news that Dr. Joseph Venglos passed away. And the thing that really struck me was the genuine affection online among Celtic fans passing comments about him, that he was patently dearly loved by the supporters. He came in, we didn't win the league, but there was no great criticism of him. So I thought we'd spend the rest of the podcast talking about why that would be the case, why a manager who was here for only 12 months and didn't win the league, who followed a manager who had won the league, why he's so fondly looked after. So, Anthony Murray, do you want to start off with Dr. Joe? So it's the departure of the last manager and the arrival of the new manager. Do you want to start from there?
I'll introduce him because obviously we're going to build up to the obvious answer. If he did one thing, then that was enough. He did a couple of things and we'll get to them. But I just remember the reaction. I was with my dad when it was one of those ones where, I don't know, it was summer holidays, I guess. And me and my mum and my dad, we were up in Glasgow. And it was one of those ones where dad was annoying my mum by just constantly turning on the radio. You know, just knowing that this news was coming or hoping this news was coming. You know, we didn't really know who we were going to get. And the previous year, I remember when Janssen had got announced, his immediate reaction was, all right, yeah, Wim Janssen, he played for Feyenoord. Yeah, he knew Wim Janssen.
Yep.
But when Dr. Joe got announced, he was immediately kind of crestfallen. It was kind of like, come on, Celtic, can we not just get someone that we've kind of heard, you know, someone? And then as soon as you read a little bit more about him, he was a little bit more enthusiastic about it. And it was like, oh no, this guy did something at Czechoslovakia and Slovakia. And, you know, he was Aston Villa briefly. And then he's starting to like it. And, you know, Dr. Joe now has no bigger fan than my dad. You know, my dad's largely a Celtic apologist for absolutely everything. But, yeah, he's, you know, sometimes he's right. And this is one of the ones where I think a lot of thinking Celtic fans can rally around the idea that, yeah, Dr. Joe did leave a bit of a legacy and was, you know, mistreated by people that were proven to be arseholes. You know, so if you're on the wrong side of them, you know, you're on the right side of history, really.
Saint, the departure of Wim and the arrival of Joe, where were you around that time in your head?
The day that he was announced, I was in the, actually, believe it or not, I was in the old Celtic shop in the High Street, if anybody remembers that. It was a wee tiny shop in the High Street. I don't remember why I was in there, but it was a girl behind the counter, because we didn't have the internet in those days, didn't have mobile phones. So I was up the town that day. It was late in the summer. The season was just about to start. And it was a girl in the shop that told us who it was. I've got a lot of sympathy for Jock Brown, because Jock Brown wanted a big name as manager when Janssen left, and he was ambitious. And he went for two guys at the time, who I know for a fact this is true. The second thing I'm going to raise was on a podcast of yours, Brian, many years ago, you did with Jock Brown.
Yeah.
Where he told us, you know. But the first one was Bobby Robson was leaving. Oh God, who was Bobby Robson with at the time? Barcelona. He was leaving Barcelona, and Celtic had tried the year before to get him, and Robson had said no because Barca had given him a year's contract. But early that summer, Bobby Robson defected to PSV Eindhoven, who had a great team at the time, that the fat Ronaldo was approaching his peak, and I think the Romario and people like that. So it was a big attraction. So what happened there was Jock Brown spent the whole summer following Gerard Houllier about the French World Cup and the World Cup in France.
Yep.
Because Gerard Houllier was available, he had a great pedigree at the time, and Brown was desperate to get him. But Brown's mistake was that he should have called Houllier's bluff, because we got to the stage that when Liverpool came in for Houllier, and he was always going to go there first, it meant that we had nothing to fall back on. And basically, Dr. Joe was a rabbit pulled out the hat at the very, very last minute and eve of the season. So I feel sorry for Jock Brown. I also feel sorry for Dr. Joe, because he had no prep work. Ideally, during the close season, you should look at your new charges. You should decide if you need a new goalie or you need a new centre forward. So he had this new squad of players, and it took him maybe 2 months to come to terms with that before he made any signings. So I often lament the fact that I wish Jock Brown would have brought Dr. Joe in early, because then I do believe that Lubo would have been there at the start of the season, Johan Mialbi would have been there at the start of the season, and you might even get Mark Viduka at the start of the season, and what a difference that would have made to the outcome at the end of the season.
The thing about your point there on players, Stat I always remember from going into that season, and of course people need to remember it was the days before transfer windows. Mm-hmm. So the stat I always remember going into that season, there was Celtic and Barcelona were the two clubs in world football who had the most players at the World Cup.
Mm.
And I think we both had a bad start to the new season.
Yeah.
Because I think it was either 10 or 13 players we had at the World Cup. And they were knackered because he'd been away and hadn't had a break. And it wasn't until the September-October time that we started bringing in Mrazek and Mialbi. But by that point, Rangers had a 16-point head start in the league because we had this tired team. The other thing that I remember about it was, obviously, Wim Janssens looked on very fondly by the Celtic support for stopping the 10. I don't have him the same reverence as everybody else did because of the way he departed at the club. But as I often say, he walked out the front door and did a giant jobby on the front doorstep. That's what he did. He tainted the fans' attitude because he was, because he was the guy who'd stopped the 10. He tainted the fans' attitudes for years against Fergus McCann and at the time against Jock Brown. So your point, Anthony, about Dr. Joe was on the other side of the bad guys in Glasgow in the press. The thing that always stuck for me is the way that Wim left helped the anti-Celtic part of the press stoke up a great amount of ill will against the club, so that Fergus got booed by loonies on Flag Day. And so the thing about Dr. Joe coming in, it also has to be set in that context of a bit like now, the fans were just, despite the fact we'd won the league, the fans were really, really angry because the guy who'd won us the league had left. And the point I always go back to is he never managed another club again. I just felt my issue with him is I always feel he could have left with more class. He didn't need to set fire to the place on the way out the door, and he did the way he left. And it created such a period of ill will that it took us a time to recover from that. Really, we didn't really recover until Martin came. So when you then chuck in Dr. Joe, who, as you pointed out, Anthony, a fantastically revered coach throughout European football, but not really known in these circles, it just fed into that Celtic don't know what they're doing, they're useless narrative. So we start the season and it's not great, Anthony. And then we sign, as Saint mentioned, we sign Mialbi and we sign Mrazek. And we play Rangers.
And that's the last, I think that must be the last Saturday afternoon, 3 o'clock.
Yes.
Celtic-Rangers game there ever was, possibly. I remember sitting in a room, listening to the radio. You know, my dad did the season ticket plus one child, and I lucked out that I wasn't the one child that day. I've got a 5-1 T-shirt bought the week after that game, and I was going to put it on for the podcast. Not that anyone would be able to see it, but I think it's at the bottom of my washing machine. still wear it as pajamas. But yeah, so that was a weird game to sit down. You know, the media running with it. Oh, you know, he's played the blank check up front. Before talking about the 5-1 game, I always like to talk about the Dundee game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the game where Jock Brown goes, he plays Burchill, he plays Miravchik, Larson. As you tweeted, you made an excellent point yesterday on Twitter, Stephen, when you said, you know, it's under Dr. Joe that Larson goes nuclear.
Yep.
You know, we all knew Larson was decent after the first season, but it's the second season he becomes Henrik Larsson. And, you know, he scores a couple of goals, or, you know, at least one good goal off a Miravchik assist against Dundee. And that was the game where the season really started in earnest, mm-hmm. where Miravchik's in the team. And, you know, we get a bit of wind in our sails. Like, I mean, obviously my mantra is always about getting excited about young players coming in. What could be more exciting than a young striker? And I was always really aware of Burchill because he'd been at the World Cup as like a kit boy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when John Collins scores the penalty against Brazil and he points to his shirt, you know, he points to his name on his shirt. That was Burchill's idea. You know, he'd blethered about that. You know, you should do this. So Burchill, I was aware that this young Celtic striker was coming through. And I guess Dr. Joe was the guy that gave him the run out. It's funny how you misremember things, because I've spent all day watching YouTube videos of this season, thanks to the YouTubers who have constructed these playlists of Celtic highlights. And you see how many goals Burchill scored. And oh, how brilliant are half an hour highlights?
Yeah, yeah.
Remember them. Yeah. You actually get the match, really.
You can get a feel for the game.
Yeah. I mean, I could sit and watch that stuff all day. Well, having mentioned the Dundee game, yeah, we get to the... I think we had a bad result in between, didn't we?
We get maybe St Johnson in between.
Yeah, when Vidar
reset an aberration and passed it across the area and the boy nicked in and scored.
So we've got this game where, you know, Rangers are all conquering Super Rangers, but, you know, we're still the champions, and we go out with Miravchik up front, you know, and just what a wonder, you know, what a player. Mm-hmm. Just so good.
The Dundee game you mentioned, that, Anthony, it's funny I was going to mention that as well, because I recall that the Wednesday previous, Celtic had been knocked at the UEFA Cup in Zurich. And on the Saturday morning, again, these are these are the days before the internet and instant media. I remember getting into the, I was going in the Govan Emerald bus at the time, and I went into the pub, and the guys were still drunk for Zurich, who'd been in Switzerland. And they were basically having a wee party, and I'm saying, why are you so happy? Because we get beat in Zurich. And they said, have you not heard the news yet? And I went, no, Jock Brown resigned. And I went, really? And they went, aye. So that was a watershed moment. I'm not painting Jock Brown out to be a baddie here, because I think we could have another podcast talking about his time at Celtic and some of the good things he did and some of the misguided things he did as well. But the point I'm making here is that when we went to Parkhead that day, it was like a different atmosphere. Before that, the place had been awful heavy and quite low, and all of a sudden, people are singing, people are in a good mood, you know, and the team responded. I genuinely think the team got the vibe from the supporters and went out there and pumped Dundee that day 6-1. And it will always stick in my memory, the last goal, when Miravchik, out on the left-hand side, with the outside of his right foot, bent a ball in for Henrik Larsson to score with a fine header. Because I remember just thinking that day, wow, I would have been 32 at the time when that game was played. And I remember thinking to myself, I've never seen anybody do that in a Celtic shirt before. That is incredible. And it was a wee taster of what was to come with regards to Lubo's talents. So then, moving into the 5-1 game, the one thing that sticks in my mind is that if you remember the days of the beanbags, because as Anthony correctly said there, that was the last game that wasn't showed live on television. So what Rangers did that day was they had a beanbag at Ibrox, and there was something like 30,000 Rangers fans at Ibrox. So our bus leaving from Govan, no far from Ibrox, had to go to Renfrew to Hillington Roundabout and come onto the motorway there, because it genuinely wasn't safe. The police had told us, we can't let you near the Helen Street on ramp, because there's just too many Rangers fans. It'll be carnage, it'll be madness. And the bus driver, he was wet in his pants. He doesn't want to go through that either. So I always remember it took us a long time to get there because we went from Govan to basically nearly into Renfrew and turned back onto the motorway and got there. Another thing I also recall, and it's worth pointing out for the current current game, it's the first time I remember a Celtic team playing without an out-and-out striker, because Donnelly and Larson sort of, it was probably a 4-2-3-1 formation before it became popular. Donnelly became the spear point of the attack, and Hendrick and Lubo played off him. And by God, how it worked, because if you ever watch the footage of that again, Reseth missed two of the worst sitters you'll ever see. It could have been 8 or 9. We really destroyed them that day. We absolutely pulverised them. And from a Rangers perspective, who was the guy that got sent off? Was it Wilson?
Yeah.
Scott Wilson. He gets sent off, and Dick Advocaat, being a great tactical genius that everybody said he was, actually did a crazy thing and went three at the back, and Celtic just destroyed them. So tactically, Advocaat gets shafted that day. But the football Celtic played was terrific, and I think it was an indication to the fans that Dr. Joe knew what he was doing. It took a wee while to sink in. Certainly, August, September, October weren't great, but by the time November came, Celtic began to cook.
Well, that was the problem, because we'd started with the home game as champions when we thumped Dunfermline 5-0, but then we lost to Aberdeen, we beat Dundee United, and then we went to run a three draws, Dundee, Celtic, Kilmarnock, and then we drew 0-0 at Ibrox, then we lost at St Johnstone, then we drew at Hearts. So, you know, the run that Neil Lennon's just been on, there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 league games without a win.
At the end of the season, that's what killed us. So.
Yeah, four draws and a loss. So that was the thing. But if you look at the time, again, before we played Rangers, we'd lost to St Johnstone. Mm-hmm. Tony Warner made his debut because we had no goalkeeper, because Jonathan Gould and Stuart Kerr were both injured. Mark Reaper was injured, Alan Stubbs was injured, Craig Burley was injured, Enrico Anoni was injured. We had the two goalkeepers out. Reggie Blinker was injured.
Mark Reaper had to retire. It was really unfortunate, because he's another player who's very fondly remembered, for rightly so, because what a terrific centre-half. But I don't know if you two recall, maybe I don't know if I'm getting this way, but he was told not to go to the World Cup because he had quite a bad leg injury. But he did go to the World Cup, and he exacerbated the injury so much so that I think his last Celtic game would have been September. He just didn't look the same player when he came back for the World Cup. And he ended up having to retire not long afterwards, which is a real pity, and I often wonder if he had the win at the World Cup, maybe we could have got a season or two further out of him.
But yeah, after all of that, just and it was the first time we'd had such a brilliant result against Rangers, and it was, as you've touched on, Anthony, it was really when Maravchik arrived. And they just couldn't cope with him. And this famous quote from Jock Brown saying, Dr. Joe had said to him, a good team is one player that does something special. Or an average team is one player, a good team is two players, and an excellent team is three players, something like that. And we've only got one in Henrik Larsson, so we need a second. And it was Lubo Maravchik. The thing about it, again, that people will find hard in these days of youngsters knowing the name of every player throughout world football because they play FIFA and because of YouTube and because all these games, you could have a player like Lubo Maravchik, who's 33 years of age, and nobody knows that we have just signed one of the best players to have graced European football fields over the last 15 years. It's amazing. And again, that expert of football, Hugh Keevans, said that Celtic were idiots. Why would they sign in a 33-year-old, past it, guy that nobody's heard of when we could have signed John Spencer? So, Anthony, take it away. What a tell us about the terrible mistake we signed in signing this old guy called Lugo Maravcic and not signing John Spencer.
He was just, I mean, everything's been said about him, just so ridiculously two-footed. Like, he's the only, I'd honestly say he's the only truly great two-footed player I've ever seen. There's other players that can kick a ball with both feet, but Zinedine Zidane never took corners with his left foot.
No.
He always took his corners with his right foot. He would never shoot a free kick with his left foot. Pavel Nedved could smash a ball with either foot, but he would, again, take a dead ball with his right foot. Lubo scored corners with his left foot and scored free kicks with his right foot. You could not tell. You cannot tell. And that's the thing that people will always remember. But that day against the Rangers, I mean, to go back to that red card, you know, that is classic Rangers. It's like, who is this little guy doing? Mm-hmm. It's Junior's tactics. It's like, this wee guy's destroying us. He's making us look shit. And just, you know, literally the young guy trying to break his legs. And Lubo just, you know, gets up, runs it off, and is there for the second half when the ball gets clipped in and he bullets a header away as good as Larsson ever would.
From about 16 yards out.
Yeah, and placed in a good goalkeeper. Just a phenomenal, phenomenal goal.
The other thing about that game, a key player who went on to become such a key player for us in the next 5-6 years, George Albert's always bossed. Mm-hmm. Had been bossing Celtic Rangers games. And we signed a guy called Johan Mjalby, who inside 5-10 minutes puts George Albert's up in the air.
Yep.
And I'm not even sure if George Albert's played the rest of the game because I never saw him again in that game. And that was the other thing that Dr. Joe did. He wasn't just a football idealist who brings in Lubo Maravcic to compliment Henrik Larsson. He also goes and gets a Dolph Lundgren lookalike.
Let me touch upon just another wee memory of Lubo before we go into Johan Mjalby, because I remember that there was the famous TV interview, I think it was after the 5-1 game, where the BBC interviewer, I think it was Rob McLean, where it was asking through an interpreter because Lubo couldn't speak English at the time. He says, ask him what it's like to go from zero to hero. And the guy asked Lubo the question, and the reply came back, tell him I was never, ever zero. Because he was making it clear, I'm not some guy who's just tucked up out the blue. I am a pedigree footballer who's played across Europe in some of the best leagues in Europe. And he was making his point that, you know, that I deserve a wee bit more respect than what you're giving me. But moving on to Mjalby,
who made his debut in that game, that 5-1 game.
But do you remember the first time we probably saw him, what was maybe about 3 weeks before it, when Sweden beat England live on TV?
Yeah.
I that was a Saturday night game. I remember that vividly because, pardon the phrase, David Seaman had shat his pants that day. But it was a 50-50 ball and Mjalby went for it with a head. And he headed it basically. And I think David Seaman shut his eyes when he saw the big man running towards him. Seaman get castigated in the English press, but what became apparent was that this guy Mjalby wasn't just a football player, but he was a competitor. He was a hard man, and I mean a hard man in the true sense. I don't mean a hard man to what Anthony was saying there about trying to do people and things like that, because that was never Mjalby's game. Mjalby was a pedigree footballer who played international football at the highest level. So the other thing that was interesting about Mjalby is we didn't sign him as a central midfield player. Not an attacking midfield player, but a forceful midfield player. But he never really played that role, because from day one, when he made his debut in the 5-1 game, he played at centre half, and to me, he always looked very comfortable as a centre half. I liked him there. I thought, I am a huge Johan Mjalby fan. Can he speak highly enough of him over his Celtic career?
So the thing, Anthony, that I think we all look so fondly back on the Dr. Joe times, despite not winning the league, is the style of football. It's the football we played under him. And not only did we play football under him, we had terrible, let's call it bad luck with the refereeing decisions during his time as well. Mm-hmm. And he never, ever blamed the referees for it. So it was a style of football, Anthony.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, I mean, one thing I've always argued is that, you know, the first couple of years of O'Neill's football was brilliant because you had Mravčić and Larsson in the team.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't possible for players that good not to play football well and make it beautiful and play it the Celtic way. And that, you know, as long as they were there, that, you know, the thing worked. But it's in that under Venglos's team, you see them both bouncing off each other. And just, I mean, I watched the highlights of a bunch of games this afternoon. There's the 7-1 game away at Motherwell is an obvious standout. Honestly, if you were to apply like XG to that game, Celtic's expected goals would have been 30. Do you know what I mean? It's just a ridiculous game of football. I don't know why football's so different now. But Brattback misses like 10 sitters. We score 7. Larsson misses a couple. You know, we hit the bar. The keeper makes some saves. Just unbelievable. And there was that spell after Christmas where Larsson scores 3 hat-tricks in 4 games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we really did come to life. And we'd got the draw at Ibrox at Christmas time. And you know, it wasn't like this season. I mean, this season is unique in how terrible it is. But, mm-hmm. you know, we did put up the fight until, you know, the very end where we, you know, we lost against the Rangers again. But there was great games along the way. You know, I think we beat Aberdeen by 5.
Pittodrie, yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's a brilliant 4-2 away at Tynecastle. Which was, that was getting close to the end of the season. I remember that game distinctly because I remember celebrating it. I was in a pub. I must have been 17 on a school night. And I was in a pub watching that game. And after the only reason I remember it was so late in the season was because after the game finished, you know, they turned off they changed over the channel.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the Man United Arsenal Cup replay.
Is that the Ryan Giggs goal?
Yes, the Ryan Giggs
that.
Goal.
I remember so that. Yep,
it was the satisfaction of watching Celtic beat, you know, the Mini Huns and mm-hmm. then seeing one of the greatest goals of all time live. You know, it really was exciting. But yeah, to go back to the Hearts game, that's you know, when Viduka is established in the team.
Yeah.
And Viduka's arrival was another, you know, obviously it was a prolonged and complicated affair. But when he eventually got played away at Greenock in the cup.
That's right, yeah.
There's that moment where I always remember it was my cousin from Bolton describing the moment, and it's just a funny Bolton accent. But he, you know, he'd sat down and watched the Celtic, and within seconds he said he'd screamed through his room, "Bloody hell, we've signed Pelé!" Viduka scores that goal is just ridiculously good. You know, like a Cruyff turning the edge of the box and bashing it in the top corner with the outside of his boot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Viduka was a fantastic Celtic player. I know there's many reasons to dislike him, but he'd come in next to Mravčić and next to Larsson. Oh, I don't know. Did he overlap with Mravčić, or had he picked up the injury by then?
No, I think towards the end of the season, Mravčić and Viduka were together, yeah.
Right. But yeah, so one thing that, again, watching these highlights you forget about is like he actually got a tune out of Blinker. And Blinker was a terrible footballer. But you watch these highlights and, you know, Venglos was the guy that, you know, got him not terrible. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I rediscover watching these highlights is a much-forgotten renaissance for Tosh McKinley.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like, I remember Tosh McKinley being great under Burns, and I don't remember McKinley being involved at all in the Janssen season. Maybe he was, and I'm just not remembering it. But then McKinley comes back into the team, and McKinley had such a good left foot that in an attacking team, he's always going to, you know, contribute. And
there's a game for that period that really irritates me. And we need to mention it because I think you both will recall it in great detail. We played Rangers at Ibrox. Alan Stubbs scores a peachy goal that night, curled it into the top corner, and Hendrick scores a really unusual goal. Lubo, it's actually a pity Lubo's shot didn't go in because it was fantastic. Hit the bar, come down in the line, and Hendrick, being sharp as a tack, threw himself at it and just managed to get it over the line and no more. But do you remember Stephen Mahy's penalty claim? He's going into the box. shooting into the Broomland Road in the left-hand side, and Kinchelskis comes across him at right angles and just takes him out.
Do you remember it? Unless Kinchelskis had pulled out a mask and an axe and looked like a character from a horror movie, or pulled out a shotgun, it is the most, in all of the things, you know, I always go on about Rangers fans. If you mention about bad decisions, they'll mention the 1980 Cup final. In 1989 Cup final, it should have been a throw-in. Mm-hmm. There's nowhere in their repertoire that they can throw up that penalty claim on that foul as being, these are the type of decisions that we don't get, that we do. It is the worst non-penalty in all the terrible non-penalties in my lifetime against Rangers. It's dreadful.
Well, ask yourself this then. If we were in the ascendancy at that point, but we had them in the ropes, if we get a penalty at that time and score, but we should have the penalty. So if that penalty gets converted and we win 3-2, again, the season changes at that point, because we could take so much from that for the running. And they set Rangers back pretty bad, because they're no great at responding when they're getting beat with Celtic. The fans getting their back, etc., etc. So, you know, I think... It's one of the turning points of the season in a bad way, because it could have been so different if we only had to get that penalty and converted it.
The headline in the Sun, with a report written by Gary Ralston, right?
Oof.
Exactly. Daylight Rodery. Celts rage at referee as Wallace cashes in. Furious Celtic were left cursing old firm blunder ref Jim McCluskey as Rod Wallace struck another title blow for Rangers last night. McCluskey enraged Hoops supporters when, with the score deadlocked at 1-1, he snubbed penalty claims after Andrew Kinchelskis sent Stephen Mahey sprawling. Right? So there is a rabid hun writing an article that says Celtic should have had a stonewall penalty. So when you're at that sort of level, but you're right, if we'd have scored that goal and gone on, it's a bit like the Di Canio goal in two seasons earlier.
It's a sliding doors moment. It's one of those moments in time where everything could have changed in the back of that, and we'll never know.
But the point about, I mean, I know we're jumping on a wee bit, but the 5-1 Aberdeen game, right? And the team that we played that day, I always felt that the biggest problem with Barnes and Dalglish when they came in is that Alan McDonald decided, he'd taken over from Fergus, and he decided that Celtic were going to follow the Rangers thing, and he gave them loads of money, and they spent money when they didn't know what we already had. So they went by Ayo Benkovic, because they don't know that we've got Lobo Moravcik. And when you look at this team, you didn't need to do much in this team to turn us into champions. You just needed to make a slightly bigger squad. The team that played, and this is with Moravcik injured, this is the team that played against Aberdeen. Johnny Gould, Boyd, McNamara. Now, this is in number order. So, Boyd, McNamara, Larson, Burley, Lambert, McKinley, Blinker, Reseth, Mialbi, Viduka, with Butchell, Bratback, Healy, Keogh and Corr on the bench. But there you've got Boyd, McNamara, Larson, Burley, Lambert, even McKinley with his left foot, Mialbi, Viduka, Matt Butchell, who was his pace. They couldn't, the SPFL or SPL defenders at the time couldn't live with his pace. And even Vidar Reseth would have been in teams. You just add two or three, you just needed to add two or three players onto that, and we had a fantastic team that Dr. Joe had created there.
Absolutely. I mean, the whole thing about the Barnes Dalglish thing, and we're jumping a wee bit ahead here, is the fact that they basically ripped up all the things that Dr. Joe had built, and it makes me wonder if he'd hung about for another season, it would have been interesting. Sadly, that wasn't to be the case. But I think right about that period, we went into overdrive, because it was an 11-game spell in the league where we won 9 and drew 2. And I think the aggregate score in the 11 games was crazy. It was something like 43-4. You know, 43 goals scored, 4 against. You were only scoring like 3-4 a game.
Well, from the 19th of December, We beat Dunfermline 5-0, beat Dundee 3-0. We drew Rangers 2-2 in the game when we should have had a penalty at 1-1. We then beat St Johnstone 5-0, Hearts 3-0, Kilmarnock only a goal, Motherwell 7-1 away, as we've mentioned, Dundee United 2-1, Aberdeen 5-1. We draw with Kilmarnock 0-0, but then we beat Dundee 5-0, score 4 against Hearts, who we've just talked about, and then beat Motherwell by 1. I mean, that, as you say, saying it's the goals that we're scoring, it's the creative football that we were playing. It was just wonderful to be going to the games. It was so enjoyable.
And at the end of all these, like I say, if you go on YouTube and find these half-hour highlights, you know, they all have a wee interview at the end. You know, the players get interviewed and Dr. Joe gets interviewed. And it's really interesting to see him, to watch him back and hear how he reflects on the games. Because it really is about, you know, getting my really good players to play well and enjoy it, and for the fans to love watching it. You know, it's it's everything Celtic should be about. And, you know, it's, I guess, you know, before looking back to the way I am this week, I guess I might have thought he was a kind of grey old man that I don't really remember having a lot of life. The other funny thing is that I'm now so used to hearing a Slovak accent. You know, it's so familiar to me now because I live here that it's interesting to hear him. And
Anthony, yeah, what was the in the last few days since he passed, what kind of things are they saying about him in Slovakia?
Well, it's headline news. You know, it's the equivalent of a, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a better one than Craig Brown. I don't know, it's the equivalent of a Jock Stein passing. You know, it's quite a big deal, certainly for Slovan. Slovan were tweeting it out, and the national news networks were all tweeting it out. And I teach one boy who's a big Slovan fan. I asked him, you know, is there any kind of, you know, like when a Celtic player dies and people put shirts down or something like that? I wondered if there was anything like that. And I think because of COVID, there won't be. But I think culturally, it's not really a thing they do anyway. But certainly, like all the kids in my class, you know, who've heard the news, you know, were aware of something had happened. They don't all know who he was, or,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's definitely something that throughout, not just Slovakia, but also the Czech Republic, it's definitely been reported.
So, we then go through the season, and it finishes with Rangers winning the league at Celtic Park. So, what went wrong at the end?
I think the injuries were a big factor, because Maravchik, we were talking about the 7-1 game there at Fir Park. I recall vividly coming out of the game after it, and as a couple of my mates were there, and they were ecstatic, and I was a bit upset, and they're like, "What's up with your face? 7-1, how are you not happy?" And I said, I would rather have won 1-0, and that guy Maravchik hadn't get that injury, because it did look a bad one. You sometimes as a supporter, when you see somebody going off, you get a feeling in the pit of your stomach and you think, now this doesn't look good. And it kept him out right up to the cup final in May, so that's the best part of 3 months. And I remember saying to my mate, you know, I would rather have won 1-0 and him not get had the injury. And it sadly, that was a wee bit prophetic on my part, because that held us back a wee bit. Then Reaper, as I said, got injured. That he was a big loss. Craig Burley got an injury. You know, McNamara got an injury. The injuries took it, in the end, the injuries took its toll. I mean, the Rangers game, were they about won the league? From memory, I mean, you had the likes of, was it Stuart Kerr that was in goals that day? And we had to say, things were so bad, we had to take Scott Marshall on loan to Arsenal just to make the numbers up, because we didn't have any defenders. I think Tom Boyd was the only fit defender that we had. And then when you look at that game and you see Reece Earth getting sent off and you see Mahi getting sent off and some of the other things that happened, I mean, good grief, it was, you know, it's where do you start?
Anthony, do you have strong memories of that game?
I do, and it's obviously not happy ones. And it's one of these ones where I was angry about it for years and years and years. And then, you know, we become the, you know, the kings of the castle and control Scottish football for the next, you know, 2 decades. But I think I rewatched it back, like, in the sometime in the last 12 months, you know, COVID, we've watched everything, you know, what else are we going to do? And it's one of these ones that as I watch it, I get as angry now as I was on the day it happened. You know, the whole Stephen Mahé thing. I completely understood Stephen Mahé's and the injustice of the situation. You know, him getting booked for basically getting kicked or something. You know, he was justifiably furious. And Dallas cheated us. You know, completely cheated us. And then followed it up. You know, he gets hit in the coin. And you just knew he's going to give a penalty to them immediately. Yep. And he did it. And it is...
Oh, was it a penalty looking back in that, Anthony? Because I haven't watched that game for years. What was the incident?
Off the top of my head, I can't really remember. Was it a pulled shirt from a cross?
It was a pulled shirt.
Like
and was it not a corner kick and it was a pulled shirt or something like that?
It was a pretty tame decision. As penalties go, it was pretty, you know...
You just tame. Yeah, he clearly just decided, yeah, whatever happens, as soon as that Mitre Ultimax gets in that box, I'm giving a penalty. And that's the way it played out. Absolutely. Yeah, I'd say as low a moment as I can remember, but, I mean, this current season is that feeling stretched out over 6 months. You're really not appreciating.
There's a mate of mine who he really disliked the way Mahé behaved in that, but... I'm the type of person who pretty calm, blow my top for 1 minute and like go from 0 to 100. And then once I've blown it, like a minute and a half later, I can't be bothered with these people who go in huffs for hours on end. You know, what's the point? You've just wasted hours of your life. Just blow your top and go freaking mental for 2 minutes and then it's over with. And I can't control that. There are times when in a work environment, I have blown my top and afterwards thought that, Brian, that was pretty stupid. That was pretty silly, pretty shit. But you just, that's your personality, right? And I'm like you, Anthony. Stephen Mahé got fouled and was booked for it. And you know how people criticise players for behaviour sometimes? And there's been times in Celtic Rangers games and I think, no. I think that player should be praised because I deck the referee. In that split second, I'd lose it. I'd debt the referee, call him or at least call him a cheating bastard to his face. Because that's just the way I am, right? And I have every sympathy for Mahé because he was fouled, got booked, and lost it for a few seconds. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I always, and I go back to this now, that that whole game still has an impact on Scottish football today for me with the Dallas family because... One, I could never stand Hugh Dallas anyway because it was all about him. He never, in big games, Hugh Dallas never blew for full time. He would wait until there was a free kick or a throw in and then he would walk up to the ball, pick up the ball and then blow his whistle because it was about him. Because I look at him as behaviour like that as somebody who was shite at football and was always the last guy picked in the playground, right? And that's why he got into refereeing. You know, some people, maybe they got into refereeing because they were quite good at football or whatever. I always think you got into refereeing because you were the last guy picked in the playground, but you loved it. And that's why you still pick up the ball and then blow the whistle because you want to be the centre of attention. And anybody, it is impossible. When journalists talk about it, no, can it be like that? You're defying human nature if you think that Hugh Dallas was unaffected for the rest of that game after being struck on the head and he's bleeding from a Celtic fan. I'm not defending the Celtic fan, right? You shouldn't be throwing coins on the pitch. You should be banned for life.
There's two possible outcomes to that Hugh Dallas thing, right? The first one is that he was affected physically in as much as he wasn't in a mind to make decisions, in which case he should have been replaced. Because it's like anybody else getting injured. If you get struck in the head, you might have mild concussion. So he may have genuinely given that penalty on the back of he doesn't know what he's doing properly because he's still stunned after what happened. But the other part, the other argument, and this is the one I subscribe to, is the fact that he gave a penalty to show that I have the courage here to come here, get hit with a coin, and I'm going to give a penalty because look at me. I'm the main man. I'm the centre of attraction. I have the strong personality not to be intimidated, but I'm actually going to do the opposite. Not only am I not going to be intimidated, I'm going to go out my way here to be more difficult because my superiors in the stand will like this, and I will go further in the game.
Look, see if I was, if after we finish recording this, I go to walk out of the room and I bang my head on the door on the way past and it cuts me, I'm going to shout and swear at the door and see for 5 minutes, I'll hate that door and it's an inanimate object, right? So the other thing is, Hugh Dallas is going to, again, it would be against human nature for him to not be like this. Hugh Dallas is going to hate Celtic. Because he's just had his head split open. And you make the right the point. I remember, you know, you hear, I've never really suffered, you know, been in an environment where I've suffered concussion, right? I remember speaking to Adam Virgo once about, he was in a game, banged his head, and he said, first time he probably, he got up and he was fine, he played the game. And this was like 6 months later. And he said, I have no recollection of that game ever. Like from the minute, my first recollection is being in the hotel afterwards, because that's a concussion. So I'm not saying it was hard enough to be concussion, but all of these things, a player wouldn't, in these days, wouldn't be allowed to play on with that happening to him. And because it was all about him, he should have been professional enough to go off and have a change of official.
Correct.
But my point about it affects Scottish football to this day, that then gets back to my point of everything that followed that game. Again, human nature. It is impossible for Hugh Dallas's son to have a liking for Celtic after everything his dad went through following that game, for me.
Well, we don't want him to have a liking for Celtic. All you're asking for is objectivity.
Well, I'll put it more bluntly, is what I think it's impossible for Hugh Dallas's son to not have a disliking for Celtic following everything that happened to his dad following that game. His parents, their windows were panned in, people put graffiti on the wall of his house to get a police protection. His dad's hit by a coin by Celtic supporters, and I don't know what you cannot be a young boy in that household
and not be affected.
Not be affected and not hate the people who've done that to your dad.
Can I just bring this full circle here just by saying that the last game of 11s I ever played, I went up for a header. I was playing centre half and I took one in the head and generally like landed and woke up, and it was like waking up on a new day. You know, like genuinely like, oh right, this is what concussion is, because I don't remember getting here. I played out the rest of the game and then retired. But I only mentioned it because it was on a park which adjoins the stadium in which one Celtic lost 5-0 to Artmedia Bratislava. And it was also the same stadium where I think Jock Brown and Dr. Joe went over and saw Moravchik for their last sort of scouting mission and decided, yep, he's coming. Yep. So just to paint a little picture there, my concussion was in the same Celtic famous stadium, or next to it.
And then the final thing is, we didn't win the cup either.
Yeah, the only cup final I was at, disaster.
Yes. We ran out of steam by the time the cup final came. He brought Lubo back in a desperate attempt to influence the game, but it became clear that Lubo wasn't fit. He was hobbling that day. Another mistake he made was, we went to Tannadice a few days before the cup final, and Mark Birchall scored twice, I think, and we won 2-1. And Birchall, again, had come through, and he'd played a few games left out. But the two goals he scored that day, he looked really, really sharp. And I was convinced that he was going to play him in the final, and he never played him in the final. He never even made the bench. He put Tommy Johnson in. And Tommy Johnson, he came out of nowhere. Hadn't he played all season? He had injury problems as well. And I do think, you know, if we're going to give Joe Venglos praise, I think the one thing I would criticise him for was his cup final team. But it was poor selection.
Yeah, I think it was that eternal dilemma of, do I play Birchall, young guy who's suddenly, you know, doing something, or to get Moravchik back fit and get him on the park because I know he can do something special. But then once you've made that decision, it ends up being the wrong one because he's not capable. But it's one of those ones that it's only with hindsight you can be certain that it was the wrong one, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. The other detail about Dr. Joe I would like to mention is quite funny. Anyway, again, it's for your interview with Jock Brown. It always stuck my mind, Harry. It was some of the Scottish media, the journalists, were in it went to Jock Brown to complain that they couldn't understand Joe Vinglos's Eastern European accent. They were having trouble understanding him. I mean, the guy spoke perfect English. I mean, he was a very slow speaker, very methodical. But, you know, the interviews I saw on the telly, I couldn't see an issue with understanding what he was saying. So you can imagine the usual suspects, the likes of Traynor and Keevans and Gordon Waddle and the likes, Ralston, get into Jock Brown to complain. And Jock Brown, to his eternal credit, turned around and said, you know, so what's the issue? And they said, well, we can't understand what he's saying. And Jock Brown says, feel free to converse with him in any of the other four languages in which he's fluent. And I always think that is one of the greatest come downs that I've ever heard, because he sent them out with their tail between their legs. This was a hugely intelligent man who was deserving of more respect. And since he died there, the people have been putting things up on Twitter. Some of the reactions to Joe Vinglos in the early days are despicable. It's utterly disgusting, some of the headlines. I mean, we spoke about Big Shuggy at the beginning there. When Celtic signed Big Shuggy in 75, the headlines were respectful. It was the Iceman cometh, or this kind of thing, you know, a wee play, you know, a wee bit of banner headlines. But it was very respectful because he was a captain of his country. Now, fast forward 20 years to when Dr. Joe arrives, it's like blank check, dud check, Doctor Who. And you're thinking, what is that about? That's just, it's not respectful. It's not real journalism. It's gutter journalism. And that's the one thing I've always hate the Scottish media for, because they belittled that man when he came in. He was deserving very much of a lot more respect than what they gave him.
You've triggered me there. Just the thought of a trainer or one of these characters, even, you know, calling him an Eastern European now, I immediately snap and say Central European. You know, that's the way I am now. I'm a Central European, as was Joe Vinglos. But one of the cool things about watching back these highlights is you very quickly get the sense that Archie McPherson is the commentator in a lot of these games. I mean, I don't have a strong opinion on Archie McPherson. I guess I always would have assumed he was a Hun based on Only an Excuse sketches that I half remember. But watching those highlights from that era, you do get a sense of how much Archie McPherson appreciates Larson and Moravchuk. You know, Davy Provins still saying, oh, the wee Czech guy is doing really well. He's not a Czech. We've established that. He's a Slovak. They're both Slovaks. But McPherson really does gush all over Larson and Moravchuk. You know, he's just speaking about how, you know, Celtic have pulled out this little gem, this magician, you know. So they were very, at least McPherson was very quick to pivot towards logic and sense when discussing these, you know, guys that in hindsight were absolute superstars that we were lucky to see.
McPherson's giveaway, we're a wee bit older than yourself, Anthony, but McPherson's giveaway when he was watching, when he was commentating during the years, and I used to laugh at this. If he really admired somebody, he called them by their Christian name. So he would get a Celtic game and he would say, there's Doyle running down the wing, and he plays the ball into to Craig, who lays the ball off. Oh, Kenny, what a touch. Or it would be Danny, or it would be Paul, or it would be Henrik or Charlie. The players that he genuinely admired, he had a really cute habit of referring to them in their Christian name rather than their surname, because you know, that was a wee thing I picked up on during the years of watching his commentary since I can remember.
I mean, the thing that when you mentioned there about saying about the press going, again, you've got to give people the context that this was a time when David Murray controlled Scottish football. Mm-hmm. David Murray particularly controlled the coverage of Scottish football, and journalists, if a journalist spoke too much out against Rangers, the editor would get a phone call from David Murray, and the journalist would be called in and pretty much told he had to change what he was doing. on the whole, with a handful of brave exceptions. So it was this whole culture. So that then just created a culture of it was dead easy to criticise Celtic because Fergus treated them with disdain. So you know, it was two different ways of dealing with the press. David Murray had them in his pocket. Some lovely expenses trips and family holidays of people who ended up having jobs at places close to the south side of Glasgow had, whereas Fergus's attitude was these people can't be trusted and let's keep them at arm's length. So that it all feeds into why it was so much easier to write the blank check piece about, or the dud check piece about Moravcek. But you look at the signings that he brought in, Mialbi, and as I said earlier, Reseth got criticism, but, you know, was he really as bad as people said? He brought the best out of Larsson, he signed Moravcek. And, you know, how might things have been different if it hadn't taken so long to get Mark Viduka in? He created a great team, but he left. Why do you think he left, Anthony?
Well, I mean, it was just, he was never going to stay. I mean, it's easy to say that in hindsight, but, well, McDonald had his project for Barnes and Dalglish.
Alan McDonald, yeah, because there'd been earlier in the season, again, Dalglish had been part of a group with Jim Kerr that were sort of sniffing around to see if they could take over Celtic in some sort of consortium. And then that had kept the concept amongst the fans about, again, it was that time where David Murray, if you weren't spending £10 more than you earned, you were doing a disservice to the fans. Mentality had been built up in Scottish football, so you had Motherwell and going to the wall during this time because of it. You had Dundee going to the wall. Basically, you had a mentality that created Scottish football, you know, only just now clearing its feet from the debt created in that culture at the time that we were anti. But McDonald had decided that he was going to buy into that as well, and I think towards the end of the season was telling the fans that some Kenny Dalglish would be part of the setup for the next season and stuff like that. So there was no other options, was there?
I remember my default setting just being, this is a terrible idea. You know, like I say, I would have been a 17-year-old boy working in a Halfords. And I remember telling the other guys in Halfords that this is going to be a disaster. The guy next to me was an older guy that was a Scottish Liverpool fan. And him being, oh, Dalglish involved. I'm like, no, this is going to be awful. This is not going to work. Mm-hmm. And obviously when we pump Aberdeen 5-0 on the first day of the season, I'm all in. It's like, oh, I was wrong. Of course this is going to work. But Viduka, Moravcek, Larsson, the same team for 12 months? How can it go wrong? And the rest is history again.
Seen, would you have liked to have seen? I mean, it's one of these things, you talk about sliding doors moments. If he'd stayed, we wouldn't have had Martin O'Neill, probably.
Yeah, I wouldn't spot Martin for the world. Thinking back to why Venglos left, I'm writing my brains here because I don't particularly recall him having any great desire to stay. But when he passed away the other day there, I looked at it, he was 63 when he left Celtic. And he never took a club job again. So I do get the feeling that he took the Celtic job because he had affection for Celtic. It probably was at that stage of life that he didn't need the hassle of being a manager, but maybe Jock Brown had persuaded him that even if you give us a year, it would be an exciting project, you know. And I always think he did have deep respect for Celtic. He was old enough to remember the Lisbon Lions at their peak. He played against Celtic in 1964 when Slovan Bratislava were beaten by Celtic in the Cup Winners' Cup. So I do genuinely believe that he had an affection for the club, given that he knew, he remembered that Celtic being a great team under Steen, and it was a club that he wanted to be part of. And probably there's a wee part of him as well thinks it's one last hurrah. It's one last crack at, you know, maybe winning a trophy or having some success when you've been a manager. So, you know, why not? So I'm glad he did it. Whether he was never going to be a long-term solution given the age he was. And also get the feeling as well that we don't know this, that he might have had family issues. Maybe his wife didn't like Scotland and wanted back Slovakia. And maybe he had other issues in his life. But whatever it was, I don't remember being, I remember being disappointed when he left, but I don't remember that there was much of a fight to keep him there. And as Harry said, you know, that was a surreal moment when Dalglish get involved with Jim Kerr and they wanted to buy shares and they wanted to buy the club. You know, God knows what was happening at that point. But when Dalglish and Barnes were mooted and they came on board, it was glitzy, it was high profile, it got Celtic headlines down south that they could never have dreamt of otherwise. Got them headlines probably worldwide that they could never have had otherwise. So from that point of view, I always remember the night that Barnes, because at the beginning, if you remember, the feeling was that Kenny was going to be the manager and Barnes was going to be his assistant. And the night it was announced that Barnes was the head coach and Kenny was director of football, I remember it was a brilliant summer's night and I went down to me and a few mates went out for a drink. And we just as Anthony was touching on there, we had serious reservations about Barnes because, you know, Liam Brady was still fresh in the memory and we're thinking, hold on a minute, can he have this again? Doesn't matter how good a player you are, you can't use Celtic as a launching pad for your career. We need an experienced manager. We need somebody with a proven pedigree. And there was just an uneasy feeling about Barnes for the very start. And I think if Kenny had took over as a manager for maybe a season or two and then said, OK, I'm going to pass it on to John Barnes, we're going to raise him as the you know the next manager, I think I could have loved with that. But what they did was just a mess. And it unravelled, but, you know, took a few months to unravel, but it was a shambles.
Do you know, as we're talking about this, I'm just thinking about today and what I've been banging on in this podcast for years about the structure I want at Celtic. I want a director of football who's in charge of the football division so that you've got somebody who strategically looks at the academy and the sports science and all that stuff and has an idea of the football culture we want to bring. So he goes out and gets an elite European coach who's got a track record, knows what he's doing, can bring players through. But that type of person's probably only going to be at Celtic for a year or two. Hence the reason why I would want a director of football, because you have a continuity of football culture, because that guy comes and goes. That's what Fergus McCann wanted 22 years ago.
Yep.
We did it. And we stopped the 10 with him, and we had incredible football with Dr. Joe. Perhaps the director of football person wasn't quite right. I never think Jock Brown was as bad as everybody made out, but he maybe wasn't quite the right person. But it was within an environment where Celtic were trying to live within our means of we spent what we generated at a time when, as I said earlier, if you weren't, you know, for every five our Celtic spend a tenner was being portrayed as a good thing. It is amazing how here we are 22 years later and I'm hankering back because for me the structure I'm thinking we should put in is a 21st century football structure that Fergus wanted to put in, a 21st century football structure. We chucked it out the window. And 21 years later, we still don't have a 21st century business footballing model that the rest of Europe has had and been really successful with. It's amazing how things come around, Anthony.
I mean, the man standing next to Venglos in the dugout, in all these games I'm watching, is Eric Black. And you, Eric Black had been the quasi-educated thinking man's Scottish coach, who'd, by all counts, come back to the SFA with, you know, folders and ideas and got laughed at. Obviously, McCann saw something in that because McCann recruited him. So I guess in hindsight, he'd have been the equivalent of, I don't know, Sean Maloney today. A guy that might actually be the man to run this operation, you know? Someone with progressive ideas that's been looked at Europe, looked at the elite level and aspired to being that.
As you're saying that, I'm sure in either it was on the podcast or maybe it was chat to people off podcast, I think Celtic's plan was get in Dr. Joe for 2 years to bring Eric, to bring Black through.
Yeah.
Because he knew all, because Celtic saw that the future of football coaching was not your hairdryer type manager. It was in education and in coaching, and Dr. Joe was that type of person. So you then have a younger version of that, educated, got his badges, been around a bit in terms of continental Europe, ease him through. Dr. Joe then retires after being there for 18 months, 2 years. And I think that, I'm pretty sure Jock Brown said that that was the original concept. That was the mm-hmm. blueprint for those two. But it never came to be. We had, as I say, we ended up...
I feel sorry for Black because he gets a bad rep for that Inverness game where Viduka took the huff. Because he said... He made Viduka was having a he was having one of these games. He could be very, very good and he could be very, very he seemed a huffy big guy to me. He took the huff off all easy. And he was having one of these huffy games. And quite rightly so at half time, Black said to him, need a wee bit more out of you, big man. You need to get a bit more energy. And he just took the absolute huff and I think it's been well documented. He started effing and blinding and everybody was taken aback, and I think somebody, I think he threw a boot at somebody, I don't remember the exact details, but I felt sorry for Black after that, because he seemed to be tainted from that incident. It wasn't fair in him, because he did nothing to deserve that, other than the fact that Viduka was a huffy big bastard. And somebody else I can imagine a few Scottish coaches through the years, when I said, right, me and you, into the next room, and we'll sort it right now. I'm not advocating that for a minute, but I think somebody like Viduka has to be treated in a certain fashion, and he takes liberties, and he took a liberty with Black in the knowledge that Black was too tame a personality to take him up in that. So I've got sympathy for Black. I don't think he'd been a great manager, but I think he was a good number two and a good coach.
I think Mark Viduka's proved since then that he maybe has, and he also proved before then actually in the challenges of trying to sign him. I think he's got, I think he had more other issues that had an impact on his emotional well-being.
One of the things that makes me like Viduka more in his, only in hindsight, is the fact that he dicked on every club that he played for. You know, it's like we think it's, he slighted Celtic, we don't like him. Goes off to Leeds. Leeds get relegated. Sorry, I'm out. Off he goes. Signs for someone else.
He goes to Newcastle. He gets Newcastle relegated and he ended up in Middlesbrough in the end. And guess what? Middlesbrough get relegated. So there is a pattern in there.
Final.
Yeah, well, no, fair play. Yeah, but what I'm saying is, across the board, he was responsible for I'm sure he's been responsible for three clubs getting relegated. Now, there's a wee pattern emerging there. That's no coincidence.
At least he's consistent, though. He wasn't picking on us.
As you say there, across the board, he was a pain in the arse everywhere he went, basically, because that's the kind of guy he is.
I mean, he's back in Zagreb now. I read the other day he owns a coffee shop in Zagreb.
He drinks espressos in the street.
Yeah. Did you know that Luka Modric was his cousin?
Really?
Really?
Never knew that.
There you go. That's a silencer for the end of the podcast.
Can you think of any other famous footballing cousins?
No, only famous footballing brothers.
Well, actually, I'm wrong. I'm thinking Ian Hart and Gary Kelly, but they were nephew and uncle, weren't they?
Were they?
Yeah. Huh? Lampard and Redknapp would be cousins.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. What about
I have just found out the belter of all footballing cousins.
Who's that?
And it's another Celtic player.
Give us the first one. I bet we can guess the second one.
Do you want the Celtic player or do you want the non-Celtic player?
Give us a Celtic player.
Olivier Tebele.
Oh, I'm not going to get this.
Olivier Tebele. It's no Drogba, is it?
It is. Did he?
Really?
Yes.
That was a guess. Seriously, was a guess. Wow. Well,
of course, Bolingoli and Lukaku.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah.
Right, enough from there.
That's enough hilarity for one night. Yes,
That's our Dr. Joe tribute podcast. I'll need to try and any particular song that you think would be a tribute to Dr. Joe, Slovakian national anthem, anything like that, you know?
Oh, it's a belter. I recommend it. The Slovak national hymn, as they call it, is well worth listening to.
I'll maybe stick that on at the end of the podcast. I'm not going to ask everybody's opinion on the current Celtic manager because we know where that is. Anyway, Anthony, your dad will not be liking this podcast because there's been some sweary words in it.
Oh.
And he found out that you were drinking heavily in pubs at 17.
17? Now you rocked yourself in it there, man.
I never said I was drinking. I just said I was in the pub.
The insinuation was there.
There'd been a bag of brown flavour nuts and some iron brew.
Do you know what? Because
even though you're now twice the age, you still can't admit to your dad that you were drinking in the pub at 17.
It's funny when you spoke about the Ryan Giggs thing, because I think... genuinely, that game at Tynecastle was the only game I missed all season in the domestic football. And the reason why I remember it so well is I ended up in the pub with my father-in-law, God rest his soul. And just as you said there, it sticks in the memory. Celtic win 4-2, we're dead happy. The guy in the bar turns the telly over and you think, well, it's extra time, man, you're in Arsenal. This is a result, we'll get a wee bit more football before we leave. And we witnessed live, as you said there, one of the great goals when Ryan Giggs scored. So, it's funny the memories that come back, because the Dr. Joe season, I saw virtually every game, but I can't remember why I wasn't at Tynecastle. Genuinely, really unusual for me to miss a game at that time.
Well, that's us. I will dig out the national hymn.
I'm looking forward to hearing it.
I'll get that in the podcast, and I'll say St. Anthony and Anthony... thanks very much.
God bless Big Joey and Dr. Joe.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that podcast. As I will say, the more along soon. Sure, we'll be talking about the season and where we are with the manager. Regardless of anything, I'm fed up watching crap, so I just want us to go on a run of winning games. Whenever the league is over, we appoint a new manager, something very exciting, and we go on to win the treble again next season. That's my hope. You never know. That's why we go every season to start watching our team. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady. That was him, Anthony Murray, and him, St. Anthony. This is me saying goodnight. God bless. Goodnight.